This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At 1 o'clock today, there's at least a report saying there's one big, bad, evil bad guy in the Astros saga.
One boogeyman here.
Yeah, there's someone that made everybody do this, supposedly. I'm not quite buying it, but we'll discuss it at 1 o'clock. And in the 1 o'clock hour today, a record holder who lost one of his all-time records wants it back, says that he deserves it 20 years after it was broken. Plus, there's a quarterback looking to potentially leave if that's what it takes to become a franchise passer elsewhere. All coming up on Grant and Danny, but let's kick off our Beltway Blitz covering the Redskins, the Capitals, and the Nationals on the gridiron. Three teams, one segment. Started off with J.P. Finley of NBCSportsWashington.com. J.P., Trent Williams talking yesterday with Ron Rivera. Do you think Trent Williams will end up playing for the Redskins this season?
I don't know that answer. I think it's going to come down to cash or guaranteeing some of the cash that's left on the 1 year of his deal. But I think already just having a first step of having a conversation, and then, you know, the next step will be Trent coming in the building. I think they've made more progress in the 6 weeks Rivera's been in charge than they did all of last year.
When you say cash, do you think Trent Williams is looking for a new contract still?
I don't know if he's looking for a new contract with the Skins. If I had to guess, if I was Trent and I'm, you know, a year away from free agency on what will probably be the last big deal he ever gets, I would just be looking for more guarantees in the final year of this deal and be looking to get to free agency next year. But maybe he wants an extension. I don't know. The extension would have to look pretty juicy to pass up the opportunity of free agency when – maybe you just sign a one-year deal, and then you're looking at a new CBA, and everything could go crazy.
Joe Perry Finley, same question except for Quentin Dunbar. What's going to happen there?
I don't know. I mean, there's a new report now that Dunbar's going to meet with Ron Rivera tomorrow, and it seems like he's kind of walking back the trade request stuff. My guess is Dunbar got frustrated that he wasn't being contacted by the organization and wanted something to happen because he's severely underpaid for his position and being a starter in the league. But I think Ron is really good at talking to guys and kind of making them understand a bigger picture. And I said last night on the radio with Chad, I still think it's likely Dunbar plays for the Redskins this fall, and I'm not changing that at all. I don't know that they'll give him more money this year. Maybe they can guarantee it so he feels a little bit better. But Dunbar is the kind of guy that's looking at a real payday next year when he gets to free agency.
J.P. Finley of NBC Sports Washington. Help me out here. Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't you say yesterday you talked to Dunbar directly? Isn't that what you reported?
I did. I think it was Monday night, but yeah.
He told you he wanted to be traded? Am I missing something? Because he's saying something completely different now. And when players do this, I just kind of say, I can't deal with you. You got to pick one or the other here.
You are correct, Grant.
Okay.
I talked to him Monday. I mean, I think three or four other reporters had the story that he wanted to be traded. So
right.
Clearly,
because here's my thinking.
Changed.
It's one thing if it's not directly from the player and someone in his camp or an agent or something is floating something to a reporter, I get all that. But when you talk directly to Dunbar and he gives you the ability to go on the record and say, hey, I just talked to Quentin Dunbar, he wants to be traded. And now Doc Walker, I believe, is with this new report, had another phone conversation with him, where Dunbar's telling him, hey, it's not that I want to be traded. I'm not requesting a trade. I just need to figure out where I'm at. Like, he's either changed his mind or he doesn't know what he wants.
I'm guessing he's changed his mind based – I don't know this, but the reaction to the trade demand, I'm guessing probably didn't go that well. And I think now that – he also hadn't spoken to Ron Rivera at that point. And I think speaking to Ron could change the situation for him.
biggest issue or biggest team need with this club if Quentin Dunbar's back versus if he's not?
I mean, they need corners, man. They're desperate. And I think Dunbar's pretty good. When he's on the field, he can play at a high level. So I think they want him on the field. He is an asset for them, especially at his current contract. I don't know that they're going to give him more money, but at about, you know, $4 million, maybe you can guarantee it and you're still getting the value there.
JP Finley, check him out, NBC Sports Washington. Great work as always, man. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
You got it. Let's talk some hockey. J.J. Reagan covers the Caps. You can check out his work at NBCSportsWashington.com as well. Hey, J.J., back-to-back losses, 12 goals allowed, two different goaltenders. I mean, the problem right now isn't between the pipes. This defense is breaking down. What gives?
Yeah, the defense has been bad. It has been the weak point of this team all season long. It's just that we never really noticed because they've been outscoring all their problems. And it's like a team that's on a winning streak. You develop some bad habits. And so we've seen the defense deteriorate over the last few games. You know, you can't rely on Alex Ovechkin to score a hat trick in the last 6 minutes of a game always to solve all your problems. So we've just seen some bad habits develop. I think they're going to end up playing better and play their way out of the slump. But it goes to a larger issue of, is this defense good enough to win a cup as currently constructed? I don't think it is. And I think they're going to have to make a trade before the trade deadline to fix it.
Yeah, what can they do, right? They're cash strapped. They don't have much cap room. It's up to Brian McClellan to get really creative here. What do you think can happen?
So cap-friendly, which is the greatest tool on earth for these kinds of things, projects that they're going to have just a shade under $3 million of cap space to work with at the cap deadline. Plus, teams can retain up to 50% of a player's salary in a trade. So they can get creative with this, and they will have a few options. The biggest need right now, they've got two right-shot defensemen who are a great fit for the bottom pair, but no one to play with Dmitry Orlov. Nick Jensen is a bottom pair defenseman. He's not good enough to play in the top four, and the same goes for Radko Gudas. I'm comfortable with either of them playing on the third pair, but they need a right defenseman to play next to Orlov. I think that would be the ideal fit for them to find something there. They can get creative with it. There are some options out there. The only problem is that everyone knows this is what the team needs and that they're going for the Stanley Cup, so no one's going to do them any favors.
Alex Ovechkin still sitting at 40 goals and 698 in his career as he approaches 700. He had a chance to do it at home. Back-to-back games, Flyers, Isles, didn't score in either of those two contests. So it looks like it might come on the road here. Three games upcoming against the Avalanche, the Coyotes, the Golden Knights. None of these games are gimmies, are they?
They are not gimmies at all. Colorado is one of the best teams in the league, and they filled Grubauer's between the pipes there, and he's coming off a shutout. It was against Ottawa, who's practically an AHL team at this point, but it was a shutout. Arizona is going through a bit of a slump, and there would be some poetry there since that was where he scored the goal. But that game's going to start at 10 o'clock at night, so I know pretty much everyone's hoping it doesn't happen there. And they are a defensive team. That is their strength. So that'll be a struggle. And then it's Vegas, who's usually good, maybe playing under where we thought they were going to be, but a very good team as well. So definitely no gimmies here, but I think this is something that he's going to go on the road. He'll probably feel a little bit better about it, not having to talk about it maybe perhaps as much, or it could be worse because the visiting media, who don't usually have a chance to talk to him about these sort of things, are going to be all over him and asking him these questions. So it'll be interesting to see if he can play his way through it or if they come back from this break and he's still looking for it.
Give me your thoughts on Evgeny Kuznetsov. When's he coming back? What do we know?
So he has not skated since the injury. He is going to travel with the team on the upcoming road trip, but he did not practice today, and he will not play in tomorrow's game in Colorado. They are off on Friday, so the earliest we could know if he's going to play in Arizona is Saturday morning with the morning skate. They usually, in these situations, like to have a player get a practice in and then a morning skate in before they play. For a player like Kuznetsov, maybe they make an exception, but Saturday would be the earliest for him, which means Lars Eller bumps up to the second line, which is okay because he's been great the last few games. I think few players have played well the last few games. Lars Eller is one of them. And then Travis Boyd, who everyone wants to see get another shot in the lineup, is going to play third line center.
Thank you, JJ. Much appreciated. Let's talk baseball. Jesse Dougherty, Washington Post. Pitchers and catchers have reported. Jesse, storyline on the pitching front might be the fifth starter spot. Who do you think has the inside track to nail down that job?
I have to say Joe Ross, just because, you know, he's had the job in the past as a regular in the rotation. Last August, he did shine. He was the guy who got that start in the playoffs. Obviously, he was already on the roster, but I think thinking about a long man option for that seven game series in the World Series, he was the guy they wanted to go to. So I don't know if it's his to lose, but just given sort of recent history, where he is in his career, he probably does have that inside track. And then, you know, from there, it's also Austin Voth and Eric Fetty vying for it.
Who hits the middle of the order, 3, 4, 5?
Oh, man, that's a $1 million question down here. I mean, I think, you know, you put Juan Soto third, maybe, just to get him that extra at bat a game, should it come down to it. And then, you know, 4 or 5 is interesting. If Howie Kendrick's in the lineup, I think he hits 4. Felton Castro can profile well as a 5-hitter. And then, you know, 1, 2, 3, you're kind of set up with some mix of Trey Turner, Adam Eaton, and Victor Robles. So depending on that sort of Castro, Kendrick, you know, if Eric Timms is playing, you don't want to go back-to-back lefties, but, you know, Zim could even hit 5th. So there's a lot of combinations you can use. I think putting Soto either 2 or 3 maybe gives you a little more flexibility with the righties and lefties, but at the same time, I mean, I'm not sure. He hit 4th most of last season, so we'll see how it shakes out.
How concerned should we be about Juan Soto, who's never really slumped, not having Anthony Rendon to play Robin with his Batman in the lineup?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, I think he'll have to get even more disciplined. We've always said that one of the best things about Juan is how disciplined he is. Conceivably, if you're an opposing pitcher or an opposing manager, and you look at this Nationals lineup, the one guy you're not going to let beat you is Juan Soto. And that's going to require a lot of patience on his end, because he's not going to see a ton of strikes. He's not going to see a lot of fastballs up in the zone. I mean, there really isn't much reason to do that. And you hope, if you're the Nationals, that early in the season, guys like Howie are still hitting well, or Starlin Castro picks up where he left off in the second half of 2019, and it makes teams come to Juan a little bit more. But I could see him, you know, really like walking a ton. His on-base percentage could really soar. And those are things that could help the team. And we saw it with Bryce, you know, a lot back when he was with the Nationals, that maybe when his power numbers were down a bit, he was still getting on base a lot. I think we're going to see that kind of season from Juan Soto.
Jesse, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. We'll see you soon down there.
Yeah, of course, guys.
Enjoy West Palm. That is your Beltway Blitz every day at noon. Make a note. You can listen for one segment and get all the intel you need on the three teams with the most going on, jam-packed in about 10 minutes. Next, Tua Tagovailoa gets an update on his health. It's good for him. It's probably good for the Redskins. We'll explain how next. Carl Hagelin of the Capitals will be with us at 12:45. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. As always, thank you for doing so. If you missed the first half of our show, any part of today's broadcast, including our detailed analysis on how we'd handle Trent Williams if we were Ron Rivera, all you got to do is get the radio.com app and never miss another moment of the show. You go back in time up to 24 hours, toggling, and basically a little DVR for your radio.
It's really cool.
Anything you may have missed. Make sure you got Hags lined up and you're free at 12:45 to listen to that. Tua Tagovailoa got a bill of health that he was hoping for. He is on a trajectory to be able to play football this coming year. He was not sure what reports would be when he got his next update on his health, and it all came back for him glowing and positive this week.
This was the big hurdle for him and for a lot of teams. So there were thoughts that if this wasn't healed right, and this we're talking about his dislocated hip with a fracture in it. So the fracture is healed. That was the big deal. They didn't know. You couldn't really tell. And can he start doing activities? Can he start doing football things? There were thoughts at some points during his recovery that this would start to spill into OTAs. It would start to spill into training camp. And he might be sitting out for 6 weeks, 10 weeks, maybe his full rookie season. Him having a clean bill of health is a big hurdle for him to have overcome.
So this week, the big appointment that we're referencing was his 3-month CT scan.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to the hip healing better than they thought it would, I think what was really impressive was his range of motion is ahead of schedule.
Yep.
He is another month or so away from what will be considered being cleared for football activities, according to Ian Rappaport. So I would imagine that's running, stopping, obviously throwing a football, any of those types of things. He's not doing any of that yet. And I don't know that he's going to. Don't expect him to have any kind of a combine or pro day presence like he would if he didn't get hurt. But the gruesome injury that he suffered, which immediately, I think, threw his draft stock in a major question. At first, people said he might not play again. This is a Bo Jackson injury. Within a few days or weeks, I guess, when some of those rumors cleared up, it was, well, he's not going to go in the first round, obviously, but maybe you could get a bargain mid-round pick and roll the dice on him. If he continues to progress like this, it seems like not only is he going to go in the first round, but he's going to go in the early first round, as everyone kind of anticipated initially before his injury.
Yeah, there wasn't tank for Burrow. It was tank for Tua before the season started. And the only crime he committed was he got hurt.
Right.
Right? I mean, now, Burrow just put up video game numbers. It's not as if Tua was some slouch, though. He wasn't some embarrassment. He didn't have the kind of regression we've seen from guys that, you know, are Heisman Trophy candidates, and then the following year they don't do the same thing. He was awesome.
The best way I can kind of make sense of the Tua Tagovailoa stock is through the Indianapolis Colts, who pick at 13. Mm-hmm. At 13, everyone was saying the Colts will have no chance to draft Tua, even though their quarterback starved, without trading up. Then when he got hurt, the opinion was, well, if the Colts want to take a big risk and gamble a little bit, they could draft Tua at 13, maybe a round or two before everyone else would get him. They
Let
could
him
sit him
yeah.
for a year or so, and then he ends up being their starter and their long-term answer if he's healthy. Now we're back to, well, there's no way he's there for the Colts at 13, or the Raiders say when they pick at 12. And that kind of crystallizes for me the roller coaster we've been on with him.
And more's coming. I mean, when workouts happen, guys will rise and fall, and, you know, based on a 40 time with the wind blowing in one direction, or, you know, what happens at the combine. We're in the silly season where information and misinformation comes flying out, and it's up to us to sort of pick through and figure out what's true.
And that's for healthy players, let
that's
alone
true,
guys
right.
where if you get 32 team doctors to look at his medical reports and his imaging and his CT scans, you might have 25 different opinions on what they're seeing mm-hmm. as well. So pinning down exactly where he's going to be drafted, how teams are going to feel about Tua, I think is going to be really difficult. If we could talk about him just for a second, non-injury part of the discussion. Look, this is a guy who at Alabama was very accurate, was an advanced passer. He's got mobility. My concern with him, I won't say size, because I'm kind of past that being a huge determining factor.
He's above the minimum threshold for me.
Well, a year after
right?
Kyler
well,
Murray went one.
Sure, and the Russell Wilson success.
I mean, who's not above the minimum threshold at
That's
this
a good point.
Point.
I mean, you can't be 5'5", but I see your point.
I don't think there is a rule on height anymore, as long as if we're saying that threshold's 5'9 or something with Kyler Murray, 5'10.
Mm-hmm.
He is listed 6'1". He's probably 6', I'm guessing. He's listed at 218. I'll take the under on that. I'll bet you he's around 215, 212 or so. But regardless, it's not a size problem. It's a durability problem. That was always my one issue. Remember, the game he got hurt in, he shouldn't have been playing in to begin with. He had an ankle problem already that was an issue for him that he was trying to overcome. He's played through little things like that throughout college. He seems to always be, I put him on that, you know, when you have a fantasy player who's always got the red letter next to their name.
The constant red.
Probable, questionable, doubtful. He's always in that kind of realm. But damn if he's not accurate. If he doesn't throw with ball placement. If he doesn't get through reads pretty well. You really, really likable prospect. The other thing about him that's fascinating is he's left-handed. Now, a lot of people will say, who cares? I mean, he finished second in the Heisman vote in 2018.
Top of your head, who's the best left-handed quarterback in the league right now?
They haven't had left-handed quarterbacks.
There aren't any.
Literally none this past year. Over the last couple of years, they're endangered species. They're clearly not extinct because he's here, but they were headed in that direction. Now, the league was sending around like these people to scoop up the left-handers
right.
and put them all into some building so that we could recreate some left-handers. It's a situation where people don't talk about it, but I don't know if coaches don't want to design offense for lefties or it's harder for them to operate for some reason, but they're fighting an uphill battle.
Mm-hmm.
Tua being left-handed gives you a little something to look at, both as a wide receiver with the ball coming at you, but as a defensive coordinator planning for some of these things.
Now, people are going to call this incredibly lazy, the comp I'm about to make, and I'm willing to deal with that. A lot of Steve Young in his game. I know they're both left-handed. But Steve Young never had the strongest arm, but he was so accurate, threw with anticipation, threw a beautiful ball. Everybody always seemed to be running as they were catching the footballs from him. Part of that was offense and design and the great talent he had. Well, part of what Tua had at Alabama was great offense, great design, great talent around him. But you let that talent thrive, and he's a guy that if you give him the keys to a high-end sports car, he'll win the race with it, right? Like, everybody at Daytona's got an awesome car. He's the best driver of it. That's what he reminds me of. He's more athletic than people know. He didn't have to run a ton at Alabama, but he can escape. He can move around in the pocket. He's not going to win foot races like Steve Young did back in the day. But as a passer, that's who he reminds me of.
I don't hate that comp. I understand why you think, you know, you use the word lazy, because it checks the size.
Who's the left-handed quarterback? Right. Yeah, they're
who
about the same size.
But comps are comps for a reason. I mean, I get it. You're looking for people who remind you of someone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay if it's a little bit lazy. I don't know that it is. The news for him was so good yesterday that at least got him back into that mid-early first-round mix, I would say. It's also a huge step toward a trajectory that could lead to him being back in the top three, the top four. Right now, you got Joe Burrow going one to the Bengals, pending whatever happens with his relationship with Cincinnati. The Redskins are on the clock at two, and they'll take Chase Young if they stay put. They could obviously trade back. Let's say they take Chase Young number two overall out of Ohio State, and they bypass getting an offensive weapon for Dwayne Haskins, despite being dead last, 32nd in offensive efficiency last year, and they try to upgrade their defensive efficiency, which was 27th, with one of their great defensive prospects in years. At number three, the Detroit Lions at 3-12-1, with major back and shoulder problems for Matt Stafford over the last few years, they're sitting there. They haven't picked this high. I think the last time they picked third, actually, like third on the dot, they took Joey Harrington in 2002. They obviously took Stafford higher than that.
And what did they when they went 0-16? Is that when they took Stafford?
Stafford went 1-1.
That's when it was, yeah.
I think they take Tua right then and there, and then he doesn't have to play in that first season because Stafford's still on your roster, which would basically mean the draft starts at four.
Mm.
But if Tua Tagovailoa gets a full, clean bill of health, and yesterday is just one step toward him being a top five pick according to all the doctors and teams when they poke and prod him, it would mean the Redskins would get more for a trade back, probably, because instead of one franchise QB in the top of the board, now there's two again. Would that alter in any way, if you're a Redskins fan, how you feel about trading back? Would it change your logic? Not to mention you got a quarterback in Dwayne Haskins already, so you don't have to worry about drafting that position. You got a player at corner who might want out, and you'd have no starting cornerbacks if mm-hmm. you're getting rid of Quentin Dunbar. Just another position you've got to fill. You've got more needs being created all the time. Does the trade back and not taking Young start to look a little bit better for you if Tua is healthy and a team's going to give up more to go get him? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny. Okay, so it doesn't look as good as what I wanted.
Right, a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup is above reproach. It's perfect.
Yeah.
This is not that.
1 to 10 me on that. First, give me the scale we're working with would be that a 10 is a Reese's Cup.
Okay, so on a real human scale, like for people that don't have to worry about being fat, this is a 3.
That's a 3?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
What about for me and you in this, we can't eat anything that's good?
6.
Wow. Where'd you get it?
I don't remember.
Some weird website?
No. These I bought, I think, at like a CVS. I just happened to see them.
All right, I'm going to want more information.
I just look at keto-friendly foods, just always doing that. I need variety. You don't? I do. I'm desperate for it every day. I just try to find new things that I can
remember
eat.
Remember when we were in Houston for something? I guess it was the LCS.
Not the Super Bowl, because that was like 6 years ago.
No, we were in Houston, and we found a keto-friendly restaurant. We went to it, and they made keto-friendly pizzas and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
The place was pretty cool.
That was good.
Anyway, so I could still find myself willing to trade back, depending on getting more for two. I wonder if people could come around on that idea, because this is good news for the Redskins. David is in D.C. What's up, David?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Love the show, as always.
Appreciate you, buddy.
So I look at the landscape of trading back, right? And the only team that I would really consider it or consider it viable with would be the Miami Dolphins, given the amount of picks they have. And the only way I would do it is if I got their 2020 first, 2021 first.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, because I start to look, you start to look at the landscape of the picks. I'm obsessed with the draft. I look at mock drafts daily, hundreds of them. And I look at the talent drop-off you would have, because the other teams, right, with multiple first-round picks that have the capital to do that are essentially the Raiders and the Jaguars, and their picks are later. So looking at that, the amount of talent, there's a considerable drop-off, I'd say, after around the 15th pick. And I just and the way that we've seen things kind of unfold, I think you take Chase Young, and I think he's and that becomes essentially the identity of your team. You're already switching to a 4-3.
Even if Tua is on the board and gets that bill of health, and at 2, everyone's calling you because they want to go get Tua, and they're giving you. He mentions Miami. People are obsessed with the Dolphins because they have the 5th, the 18th, and the 26th picks in this year's draft.
And they need a quarterback.
So everyone assumes because they have 3 1s this year, they'd give up 2 this year. If you could get 5-18 or 5-26 this year and a 1 in the future, something like that, then definitely I'm doing that. I don't know that you can. I think it's probably more along the lines of you give up 3 this year, you get like 5-26 in a future 4 or something like
that. Why did the Rams get what they got from the Redskins to move up? Not just because the Redskins had the steamies for Robert Griffin III, because Cleveland wanted him too.
Yeah.
Because another team, you want this. If you're a Redskins fan, this is what you want.
Would 5-26 with like a 4th rounder next year or something, would that be enough for you?
That's enough for me. Because I end up with Okuda probably.
I think he's gone by then.
Then I end up with,
Jerry Jeudy.
Maybe. Best offensive lineman and Grant Delpit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to take 2 quality starters and more picks and more cracks at it every time. But to me, the takeaway here is the questions about Tua are going to be removed. Slowly but surely. Every time he runs fast on a track and every time he throws a ball and hits a dummy or does something and there's a positive write-up, it's great for the Redskins and our fans. Again, I've said this a million times over. The worst, the minimum, this is why the Redskins are in a wonderful position. The worst thing that can happen is the Redskins take Chase Young. Done. No problem. Right? That's their loss at this point. The win is they end up with Chase Young and more picks, or they end up with a Dallas Cowboys Herschel Walker draft haul or something. There's no downside to where the Redskins are right now. And Tua Tagovailoa being healthy is a boon. It is a godsend. It is wonderful for the Redskins. Questions removed from him are great for us.
Chris Trapasso, who we have on the show a lot, he's the draft expert for CBS Sports. He had a mock come out today. In fact, I saw it this morning, right around 10 a.m.
Oh.
And in his new mock, he had the Dolphins trading up to draft Tua. He's got them moving up to 3 and taking him there. So on his mock with trades, he's got Burrow to the Bengals at 1.
Mm-hmm.
Chase Young to the Redskins at 2, and Tua Tagovailoa 3rd to the Dolphins. He actually, for the record, does have Okuda hanging until 5, which is where the Lions, who moved back 2 picks with that Dolphins deal, would take Jeff Okuda the corner from Ohio State. But here's what he says about the Redskins and Chase Young. Washington very well could trade back, but I have a hard time believing Ron Rivera would be cool with the club passing on Young during his first draft as the team's head coach.
And that's what I think, by the way.
I keep coming back to it. It's not just Ron Rivera. It's also Jack Del Rio. You brought in a marquee defensive coordinator. They've been trying to find a DC like Del Rio for several years now. They couldn't lure one here under Jay Gruden. They finally have. This is a former head coach who makes a lot of money. He's going to be advocating, you'd think, for defensive help. Now, I'm sure he'd be thrilled with Okuda at 5 if they move back and Miami came up to 2. Good luck passing on Chase Young. If they both watch the film and they see what everyone else does, which seems to be this all-world talent, this can't-miss piece, head coach and defensive coordinator, who are the most powerful coaches in your building, passing on that guy, it's going to be hard to do.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is they're going to do the safe thing, which is to take Chase Young. Right? Even though you've got history that says this isn't the smartest way to do it, that there's a more mathematical approach. They're not going to care about that, right? You're trying to establish something, and that's going to be your new guy. That's your new exciting thing to get people to buy jerseys and to have folks be pumped up about the Redskins.
And I always rebut, the history doesn't know anything about Chase Young either. I mean, the history doesn't know who you're taking. It doesn't account for the actual players. It accounts for the math and kind of the mean situation, the average of all of the situations. I also think it's a bit of a butts and seats move, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why I think it's. I think this is a done deal.
You're
going to really
sell
do.
A million Chase Young jerseys before the season starts.
Mm-hmm.
People have had him as their avatar on Twitter since before the college football season ended. Remember when we were talking about where the Redskins were going to draft and they were somewhere between 2 and 5 with like 3 weeks left in the season and we didn't know how it was going to end up yet? And there were people already saying lose for Chase Young, not lose for draft positioning, not lose so that you can get the third or second pick or Joe Burrow or what have you. Redskins fans have largely, I think, collectively talked themselves into Chase Young already.
Oh, I think I'm sure of it. I think that's the overwhelming
thing.
They
like that he wears his jersey as a cutoff
the midriff,
t-shirt.
And you can see all the abdominals that he has.
They like that you can see his belly button. They like his long predator hair. I mean, they like the whole deal. They're all in on Chase Young. So it would go over really well with the fan base, and you know that matters to Dan Snyder. I'm not sure if it matters to Rivera or not, but it can't hurt to have your approval ratings bump up in your first draft. Carl Hagelin of the Capitals joins us next on Grant and Danny. Carl Hagelin is on the show each and every week, presented by FH Fur Plumbing, Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical, on a day earlier than normal today because he and his mates are getting ready to hit the road for a 3-game road trip. Joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Carl, I got to tell you, last couple of games, my friend, not pretty obviously at home. You guys gave up a total of 12 goals and 2 losses. I wish it was 2 goals. And you dropped both games. Your thoughts on how you guys are playing right now and whether there's a little concern creeping in or not about the performances?
Well, obviously not the results we wanted. We didn't really deserve to win the games either. So two of those games were – we definitely didn't bring it. I think we weren't paying attention to detail. It looked like we wanted things to come pretty easy. We didn't really want to work for it. And, you know, in this league, if you're not – you know, physically and mentally involved to 100%, it's hard to win games. So we need to get back to, you know, playing smart hockey and, you know, focus on playing well defensively. And that's all over the ice, you know, winning every single battle that you're in. And usually good things happen once every single guy start figuring that stuff out.
In stretches like this, what's the demeanor of the staff like, Todd Reirden and company? Are they making changes? Are they doing anything to try to mix it up?
Yeah, I think they obviously want to, you know, they have to be honest. You know, I think it's important for a player to hear your coach being honest in tough times. When you're not playing well enough, you want to hear from them. You want to hear what we can do better. And sometimes it's a wake up call. You know, it's a long season. You go through stretches where you might not be fully, you know, mentally there, and a couple mental lapses in a game will cost you. So I think our coaching staff is doing a pretty good job of, you know, telling us this is what we need to do. It has nothing to do with skills. You know, it comes down to will, and that's nothing. It's not a thing you have to, you know, work on, really. You just have to start doing it because we can all do it, and we've shown it before.
Carl Hagelin with us here on Grant and Danny. Hey, Carl, kind of along those same lines, you guys are all pros, right? You've been doing this for a long time. It's a veteran-laden team. You're not throwing yourself a parade and popping champagne with like a November 15th 4-1 victory over Colorado. By the same token, you're not down in the dumps because you lost a hockey game. You guys will be fine and you'll bounce back. But does somebody, you know, in the locker room maybe step up and say something, players, meetings, that kind of stuff, or is it just the coaches are talking and you guys are trying to go about your business? What are some of the leaders doing?
Well, I think, you know, players, we like to talk to each other. Sometimes guys just stand up in the locker room, but mostly I think it's just, you know, certain groups talk to each other, certain group of players, and then, you know, sometimes the lines are talking together. Because at the end of the day, if you focus on what you can do, that's going to bring people with you. You know, that's, if you're a good leader, you show it on the ice and guys just follow. That's the type of team we are. And, you know, it comes down to every single player and every single line to start playing better. And, you know, all it takes is a couple more percent per each guy, and all of a sudden we're back where we need to be. But You know, we definitely need to see some changes in terms of how we handle ourselves when it comes to that, you know, aggressive mindset and that desperate mindset. It's probably a good word.
Are you a yeller? I mean, you're such a nice guy. You're so friendly and cool to us. But do you have like a temper? Do you yell at guys, or are you just more of a, I'm just going to go out and work hard?
Once in a while, you know, I don't, you know, yell at specific guys. But sometimes, you know, you'll get pissed off out there, and you'll start yelling and screaming a little bit. I think it's good to, you know, let off some steam for sure. So once the game's going, you know, I'm pretty intense. I like to be focused. I like to be involved.
Carl Hagelin of the Capitals on Grant and Danny. As you get ready to embark on this 3-game road trip, do you set points goals for yourself where you say, okay, 6 possible points, we got to get 4 or 5? I mean, how do you kind of go about setting the expectations before you hit the road for Colorado, Arizona, and Vegas?
Well, I think, first of all, you know it's going to be a tough road trip against 3 good teams. Usually don't set goals in terms of points. I would say you're thinking here, you're thinking about the Colorado game. It's going to be a tough one in a tough building to play in. So, you know, the way we played here as of late, we want to get out of that game with 2 points. That's the bottom line. And you just focus on what you can do to play your best game you have here in the last month. And, you know, I believe that, you know, we'll be ready. I believe that a lot of guys are going to step up. So, you know, even though it's been bad as of late, it's still exciting times to get in and play that game, and probably a playoff type game against one of the best teams in the league.
So Braden Holtby's been around for so long, Carl, that again, like him getting pulled out of the game, he'll be fine. He's a grown-up. But Samsonov hasn't done this all that often. He got yanked the other night. Is that something where a veteran may want to say something to him? Hey, this one wasn't your fault. This is on us, or something like that? Or is it just best left to the goalies to handle it?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a goalie, they're pretty confident in themselves. So I hope a lot of times when they get pulled, they, in their head, I hope they blame the players, you know. Because a lot of, you know, you look at the times our goalies have been, you know, pulled this year, it's usually been what we've done, not what they've done. So I don't think we're too worried about our goalies.
Carl Hagelin on Grant and Danny. I don't know how well, if at all, you know Jay Bouwmeester from the St. Louis Blues, but I'm sure you saw the really scary scene last night where he was on the bench and he collapsed with what appeared to be some type of a cardiac episode. We're kind of awaiting word on exactly what happened. He is stable, luckily, and we're all hoping for the best. A, do you know him? And B, has anything like that ever happened on a team you were on where something that scary took place with a player?
Right, I know I don't know him, but I know of him, obviously. I've never been a part of a team where something like that happened. But, you know, it's scary to see. He's probably one of the best conditioned guys in the league. He's played over 1,000 games. He hasn't missed many games, and we do all the medical exams before the year, and then all of a sudden that happens to a guy who's, you know, he's in mint condition. You know, he's, you know, if you would test his body, you'd probably think he's a 29-year-old. So that's scary. You know, it means it could happen to anyone. It doesn't matter how you eat or how you train. It's, you know, some of it's genetic.
Carl, thanks so much, man. Next time we talk to you, back on the winning ways, and we won't have to ask you, what have you done with the real Capitals? See you, dude.
See ya.
Carl Hagelin with us on Grant and Danny. They're getting ready to hit the road, so generally make a note that he'll be with us Thursdays at 12:45, but we bumped him up because that bird will be in the air and they'll be on a different coast come this time tomorrow.
I think this is good timing, by the way. Get away from home a little bit less pressure. Go
well, they're
on the
way
road.
Better on the road anyway.
Well, yeah, there's that.
If you look at this year, they're excellent on the road. They are average at home. And really, lately, since the start of the new year, particularly defensively where they give up 3.5 goals a game, they've been downright bad at home. Even their wins, there's a lot of wins where they got outplayed or they played down to bad teams, but
just
they
had
still
a nice
won.
5-6 minutes, yeah.
And yeah, that's all it takes for them sometimes against these poor teams is 6-7 great minutes of hockey. They score 2 goals and they win 3-1 or 4-2. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. Next, news on the Houston Astros and their sign-stealing saga. Carlos Beltran, the bad guy? Do we believe that he was making his teammates do this? We'll explain. We'll be right back.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.